session number 22128 will form.
Bill Wilkinson, Real 4. You were just saying how the aircraft from the carriers gave you some help.
No, they weren't from the carriers, they were from the shore then. They'd flown off the carriers and landed in Malta. You see, the carriers had turned back long ago, gone back. You know, just before we got to Malta, a big ocean-going tug came out and wanted to take us in tow. Our captain says, no, I don't want you, I don't need you. A word to that effect. But somebody forward took a wire. We were still making about 4 knots ahead. The tug had stopped. Consequently, we just swung round and put a hole in us. You could have driven a single-decker bus through. Fortunately, he had a wide, high stern, and it was just above the water level. But it was in the wardroom where the officers lived, so it didn't matter. That spoilt the plan straight away, because we were supposed to turn round and go straight back to Gib. We had to go into Malta then. When we did actually go into Malta, it was just one mass of sunken ships. The floating dock was sunk, there were ships all over the place sunk. And we wondered how long we was going to be there and if we was going to be sunk. Anyhow, they started pumping the fuel out of the Ohio as soon as they could. We tied up and we was near some air raid shelters. But for some reason or other, they didn't want us to fire. I think we had to keep our ammunition for the way back. And if there was a raid, we just had to go into the air raid shelters. No. After going to Malta a couple of days, and they just stuck a temporary plate over the big hole.
What did you do ashore in Malta?
I didn't go ashore in Malta. I'd been there in the good times. That was the bad times. It had been really badly blitzed. And everything, prices of everything was sky high. I think what we'd paid fourpence for a bottle of blue was about 10 shillings then, which that was a lot of money. So I never went ashore. But I'd seen it all before, anyhow, when it was the good times. But Bamham had gone into Malta with us, so we're both going back to Gib. And we had to give her 20 tons of oil on the way back. She was running short. And she managed to get back all right, and we got back to Gib. When we got back, said, on no account must you tell anyone you've been to Malta if you go ashore. About 10 minutes later, the bosun mate comes back. Piping anyone wishing to change Maltese money must do at the ship's office. Yeah. There was a contradiction in terms there. We went back to UK after that. Went to Plymouth. I gave 5 days leave each watch because we was doing the boiler clean. As I said, the only time you got leave was when the ship was out of action. And you did a boiler clean about every 6 weeks. The captain says, well, I can only give leave to one watch. And we're going up to Greenock. He says, and I'll give leave to the other watch when we go to Greenock. Well, it was my turn for leave, actually, but I let a bloke from London go. But it's a lot handier for him to Plymouth from London than it would be from Greenock to London. Right, we had the 5 days. We goes up to Greenock. Then was on the 24 hours notice for steam. So he couldn't give us long leave. So some of the lads says, well, they've had theirs, we're having ours, and about half a dozen of them. He said, I'll give you 24 hours leave, you know, which meant you had to come back to the ship within 24 hours. But some of the lads decided they was going to take the long leave anyhow. There was about half a dozen of them didn't come back. So he says, all right then, no all night leave. But he's penalising the blokes that did come back for the ones that didn't. So anyway, we go ashore again. But another dozen didn't come back this time, you know. My, it's no leave at all then. The lad says, well, no leave, no work. They all went on strike. I was fortunate. I was motorboat crew, coxswain of the motorboat, and I was 24 on and 24 off, and this was my 24 hours off. So I went in the strike. And yeah, within half an hour, they had a marine sentry on the gangway. And a couple of hours, we were at sea again. And we had some special investigators, you know, naval police sort of thing aboard, a couple of them, detectives, try and find out who'd instigated the thing.
Who had instigated it?
I had the faintest idea. I say I was 24 hours off.
What did you feel about the strike?
Well, I thought it was justified because he's penalising the people who played fair. Won't he? And if he hadn't penalised them, the second lot wouldn't have gone. He was quite happy. He'd done his best sort of thing as he could. I mean, he couldn't know he was going to be under 24 hours notice for steam when we was in Plymouth. But what it was a prelude to the invasion of North Africa, actually. So we went down South Atlantic to pick up a convoy and come... brought him up, oiled at jib again, and threw into the Med. And we invaded, well, we helped the landings at Oran, or near Oran. I think that only lasted about 24 hours, I think, and then we were ashore again, best of friends.
What did Penn do during the landings at Oran?
I just lobbed a few shells in now and again, you know. It was we was more there really for the protection of the convoy, and I know we went into a little place. I think it's called Mers El Kabir, which was the port for Oran, more or less. You know, you got although Oran itself is a port, this was I think it was a business port. I don't know, but we went into Oran. On buses, you know, the Yanks organised some buses, like. And went back to Jib and picked up about a dozen wrens and took them. This was after all the fun and games that over in North Africa, like, as far as our landings went. And we took them to Algiers, to a shore base there. Next thing, we're out on patrol, anti-submarine patrol. Only the U-boats was out on an anti-destroyer patrol, and they sunk the Partridge. We'd just been nicely cleaned up for inspection, and we picked up survivors. We was just oil. I was up ship side, and he said, go like thick oil from the Partridge. Most of the ones we picked up were absolutely smothered in oil. Some of them died, some of them didn't. But that was about the result of our experiences in Malta at that, in the Mediterranean at that time. Next action was invasion of Sicily. We supported the landings there. And a couple of days later, we was in Palermo, which is the capital of Sicily. From there, we used to go out and look for trouble along the Italian coast. And we caught a convoy one night of small landing craft. There was us and a couple of cruisers, and they had a shooting contest, and we won. Most of the stuff was sunk.
What were the enemy trying to do?
Well, the presumably moved troops down either to support the, it was the Germans after the Italians had packed up, like, either to support their troops or to get behind ours. No, it would to support their troops then, anyhow, because we hadn't invaded Italy, and they didn't jag in until we invaded, did they, the Italians? Well, you know, that's long at Sicily. We was in Palermo, like, and we used to go out. Invasion of Sicily, next, of Italy, I should say.
What did you see of these enemy craft that you engaged?
Well, you couldn't see much, only more or less silhouettes on the water. We fired Starshell, and all you could see was silhouettes, like. They aren't very illuminating, that Starshell. I mean, you never use your searchlights. It makes you too good a target.
And these were landing craft, like?
No, landing craft types, yeah. They were all more or less laden with troops, as far as I'm gathered.
Did you fire your gun?
Yeah, yeah. Best of it was, we was a lot closer inshore than the cruisers, and at times they were firing over those. A good job in Lord Short.
Was this off Sicily or off Italy?
Off Italy. We was come out from Palermo in Sicily, and it was off Italy, the Italian coast. When the invasion of Italy began, we supported the convoys there, obviously. And as the troops progressed and landing, we had a bit of trouble at Salerno. There's met a bit of trouble in the forces trying to land there. And we went and bombarded in Salerno. There was some talk about the Germans having radio-controlled bombs. From what they said, they drop a bomb and then two planes could sort of guide it. They'd have two planes to guide it. And one of our ships was hit. I can't remember which one it was, but that's what they said was these bombs had done. It's on hearsay, whether it was right or not, I don't know. And after Italy packed up, we went back to Alexandria and was sent out patrolling the Dodecanese Islands. We went out from Alexandria looking for trouble among the Dodecanese, who were supposed to have been taken over by the Italians, had been looking after them all, but the Germans were still in one or two of them. We were trying to get our troops in to the Italian-held ones before the Germans could get troops in there. We were patrolling one night and somebody put a searchlight on us, and our captain ordered them to shoot the searchlight out. Whether we'd given them our recognition signal or not, I don't know. But after they tried to shoot the searchlight out, they started firing at us. And they hit us, missed one 6-inch shell. And there was one lad asleep in this particular spot. He was the only man on the ship without an action station because he was a coder. And the coders were on 24 on, 24 off. All time, every time. When he was 24 off, he was 24 off. This shell had exploded in the compartment, he was asleep, and apparently he'd woken up, running to the cording office, and somebody says to him, "What's the matter, Sam?" He says, "Nothing, nothing." He didn't even know I'd been hit. And it was on the news the next morning, our gallant Italians hit a German destroyer during the night. HMS Penn.
Yeah. How did you know it was a 6-inch shell?
Well, by the hole and whatnot, didn't they? They knew what the armour was, but they knew what the guns were, for sure. But didn't do a lot of damage, actually. Well, it hadn't exploded, not, I don't know. It made a hole, a hole about that big, I should think, in the ship's side. The only thing are destroyers like, and they're built for lightness. Whether it didn't go off or whether it was a dud, I don't know. But I don't think it exploded because I can't see Sam being alive to tell the tale of it. I think it was only, well, much bigger than this room, the compartment he was in, like. Well then, where did we go next?
Did you go to Ceylon again?
Yeah. That was our next port of call after we finished in North Africa. Back to East Indies Fleet, based in Trincomalee. What we did there was a few patrols. The only really interesting thing was we were supposed to go, I don't know whether it's this time or the next time, I was there again. But we were supposed to go to Sumatra to pick up a British spy who'd been ashore there for 6 months. Not particularly just in Sumatra, only East Indies lay. And yeah, we went, so of course we could only go at night, and we didn't pick him up. But we heard later he'd been picked up by a submarine. Submarine had gone in and picked him up. He couldn't have made the rendezvous with us, mate. Well, there was nothing really exciting there other than playing polo against other ships in Trincomalee Harbour. And we came back to UK for the refit. Got back about October 44. And we sailed January 45, straight back out there again, to Trinco. It's a nice harbour, Trincomalee. I used to do a lot of sailing there. Chief Boston's mate and I used to take a little 16-foot dinghy and race. Every Sunday we was in port, they had a race there, like, for all naval stuff. But the only thing is, it was nearly all officers with their own little private boats there, you know. We was sailing a naval dinghy, innit? We managed what they call a gun one time. We came third, so we was quite pleased. We didn't really do anything except patrols there until after Hiroshima, when the Japanese had surrendered. Well, they didn't know whether it was another sort of Pearl Harbor trick or not. So we went into Penang and did a victory parade. We weren't the only one, there was more ships as well, like, but it was represented from Penwent. And then the week after we went back and invaded the place. Apparently it had been scheduled for the full-scale invasion the following week. And they didn't know if the Japanese were pulling a fast one or not. So we went back and did a full-scale invasion.
So you did this?
There was no opposition. But we did a victory parade, then we went back and invaded.
So the victory parade was just to test Japanese intentions?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they did it all over. It was just to... They did a proper invasion to make sure that it wasn't making. You know.
What reception did you get in Penang?
I never went ashore. Well, I never went off the jetty. There were a lot of these kamikaze little boats. They had some little speedboats, kamikaze, you know, where they used to aim them at a ship and steer them right into it, same as the kamikaze pilots. And I was in charge of the boat something. And there was all those short little shackles for most of the rigging on the whalers and the dinghy was little shackles like for Halley to stays and whatnot. And I'm helping myself to some of these, kicking about in the boat. And our first lieutenant come up, he says, put them back. Well, I says, we're all the shortest. Doesn't matter, he said, it's looting, put them back. And he won't let me have them. That was for the ship, they weren't for me. He said it was looting. So that was that.
Did you see any of these Japanese kamikaze speedboats?
Only the biggest, just the hulls of them. No, they hadn't got anything in them. Didn't have the motors on. They didn't have any doings in it, any explosives in them. But that's what these were. But they were just the hulls. I mean, they weren't even lying about loaded bombs. They was on shore, you see, on the jetty. And that was the extent of my, well, really wartime adventures.
How do you feel now about having served in the RNVR in the Second World War?
Yeah, I'm quite pleased, actually, quite proud.
Which was your best ship, do you think?
Well, I think the happiest was Carlisle, because I said there was 56 of us all from Hull and District, you know, and we had a real good crowd, but I had a good time on Penn. I mean, at Phoebe, I went on really long enough to bother about it, and formidable. Oh, okay, I left Penn in Colombo, and I was ashore in the shore base there for about 3 weeks, I think. And I joined a Stalker, another carrier, to come home. That was one of the Woolworth carriers. We had some shell eggs on them, which we hadn't seen for years.
Some what?
Shell eggs. Eggs with shells on. We haven't seen them for ages. Only little tiny pullet eggs sort of thing from Ceylon and Egypt, like. And apparently, it had been in commission with the Navy for 3 years. And these were the original eggs the Americans had put in. And they'd been frigid all that time and kept. Oh, it was all right. So, and we really enjoyed them. Like, I mean, all we'd like to say were these little pullet eggs or a dried egg, which you reconstituted with water. Like, we got a lot of reconstituted vegetables during the war. Cabbage, carrots, turnip. Like shredded and absolutely dehydrated. No. Well, they got that ashore as well, I think. When on the passage back to UK, it was that smooth, they had to go up on deck at times to see if you were still at sea. And, after the destroyer, like, it was quite a big ship, was a. It was a Woolworth carrier, but it was quite big. I was in charge of Bosun's party there and had to make a load of wire strops for de-ammunitioning when we got to wherever we was going. Actually, we went to Gorak. Greenock or Gorak, I'm not sure which. I think it's Greenock, actually. On the Clyde. And I was making these strops all the way into Bosun's store, but I mean, our bosun's store on Penn had been a little cubby hole, about 3 foot square. Here it was a great big room. And I had two sewing machines in it, an ordinary tailor's sewing machine and a sewing machine for canvas, like. This was a Yankee thing. We had a lot of what they called T124 X ratings. They were merchant navy chaps for the engines. Not my wife, particularly Merchant Navy, but that's what they had on them. They were subject to naval discipline, I think, but they were on Merchant Navy pay, which was about 3 times as much as we got, like.
How did you get on with them?
Well, it had nothing to do with them, really. They messed on their own and everything else, you know. You know, trouble with them. So I was that busy in the bosun store making these strops. I was making them all the way back to UK.
What were these strops?
Well, little wires about 2 foot long with a spliced eye at each end. I don't know how they used them. They just sort of give me a pattern and tell me that's what he wanted.
What were they used for?
For de-ammunitioning somehow.
So you returned home to be demobbed?
Yeah. Yeah, I went from slipped up on leave again when we got back to Greenock. They sent one watch on leave and I was stuck on board for another week or more before I was sent down to Chatham for demo. I couldn't be the lucky one to have got the week's leave, like.
What condition was Hull in by the time you got back?
Well, I came home from America. I got home on Christmas Eve, 1941. 1941, and I came home. I think I went to the Dorchester Cinema, which they closed about 9 o'clock in them days. And I thought, I'll just go across the road for a drink. That was at Wilson's Corner House at the corner of Savile Street. Went in there, but no glasses. Well, I walked up Savile Street to the corner of East Yorkshire Bank, Yorkshire Penny Bank as it was then, and I didn't know where to go. It was just flat. I didn't know where to go or what, you know. And I found my way to Tony's bar. There's no beer. And I thought, well, we lived on Waterloo Street then. I thought, I'll work me at Beverley Road. I'll call in Spencer Arms, Spencer Street. That was flat. So, fortunately, when I got home, my father got a couple of bottles of beer in, so I got a drink. You know, well, I experienced again in Yorkshire Penny Bank, and I didn't know which road to take. Just absolutely flat. Well, it was very much like that when I was demobbed and came home, because that was more or less the end of the year. 1941 was more or less the end of the big bombing attacks and all, I think. And I was in bed. The mate sent the doodlebugs over to Sheffield. And so I half woke up here, I go, I thought, oh, it's a doodlebug. And that's it, back to sleep. When we was in Chatham doing our refit, we had the keys to the in dock, you use shore toilets and shore bathrooms. And when we was in Chatham, we had the keys to the bathroom. So we always used to work till about 10 o'clock at night when everybody else had finished, and then we could go and get a bath in comfort, like. So I goes in the bathroom one night. There was a couple of lads in it. And there's a rattle on the door. I shout, come in, it's open. You silly boys. That was a V2 dropping in Rochester, it was. It had shut the bathroom in Chatham. Well, Penn was adopted by Camberwell, and when we was at home one time, we went to the meeting of the council at Camberwell. It was election of a new mayor and whatnot. And we went there to what we wanted for the money they'd collected. And we're sitting there, and there was a raid on, bombs going right, left and centre, right. There were six of us from Penn. We're all looking at one another. They never turned a hair in. Didn't the council like any of the visitors? We were all worried to death. But we couldn't leave, right, if they didn't. And that's the only experience. Oh, I had a bit of experience in Alex. There was a raid on Alex one night, and there was a show.